Plus minute Apple conversation you're gonna hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me today, he's the Laverne to my Shirley. Buster Kind is here.
Oh, hello.
Did you ever watch that show, or is that reference totally lost?
I have no idea what that is, but
Okay. Leander does, right, Leander?
I do, yeah, but that was a show from the 70s, right?
Yeah, it was a good
one. Only 50 years ago, yeah. Surprised that Buster didn't get it.
Also joining us, he's more like the Newman to my Seinfeld.
What the heck?
Leander King is here.
No.
Hello, Leander.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good analogy either.
You know, sometimes they're great, sometimes they're not so great. It's hit or miss. You know, these things aren't easy to come up with on the fly.
Right.
You can cut me some slack here.
True enough.
Oh, my gosh. We have so much to talk about this week. I don't even think we're going to be able to fit it all in, quite honestly. We normally keep this to a tidy 30 minutes of Apple conversation, but this week we might go over. There's a chance we might go over, and we have to address this MacBook Pro controversy that bubbled up over the weekend. Bubbled up. Exploded.
Yeah.
People are outraged. People are downright pissed.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this.
I don't think I have either. I was going to say the exact same thing. I've never seen so much outrage about a Mac product or an Apple product.
Apple product,
before.
Yeah. But it's a harbinger of doom, isn't it? So
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. It's like if Apple releases a product that people don't love, they immediately start saying Apple's doomed, Apple lost their way, and it could just be that this isn't the product for you. You know, it could just be that. But, you know, I get it. I get people being upset. And I've seen more people upset than I've seen people excited. I haven't really seen a lot of people excited about the new MacBook Pro. Most of the people that I've talked to are pissed.
I saw one, but we'll talk about it in a minute, right?
Okay, yeah. All right, before we hop into that discussion, let me go ahead and say thank you to Casper for supporting this episode. Are you still sleeping on some ancient bed that has been passed down through your lineage? It used to be your grandparents, then it was your parents, and now it's yours.
Well, mine was someone else's parents and grandparents.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or that.
I found it on the street.
Yeah, exactly. If you're waking up with sore limbs, if you're waking up with a sore back, you should try to get yourself a new bed because that can fix a lot of those problems. Well, Casper has made what some people are calling the perfect sleep surface. Casper is a sleep brand that created a perfect mattress sold directly to consumers, and it eliminated commission-driven inflated prices. And its sleep surface is award-winning. In fact, Time Magazine named it the best invention of 2015. The mattress was created by an in-house team of engineers who spent thousands of hours developing the Casper. It combines a proprietary combination of springy latex and supportive memory foams to create a sleep surface that's got just the right amount of sink, just the right amount of bounce. Plus, it's breathable, so you'll stay cool while you sleep. And you might think this mattress costs thousands of dollars because great mattresses always do when you buy them from department stores and the like. But no, I say to you, this mattress is quite affordable. A twin can be had for $500. A king can be had for $950. That is an insane deal. And the best part is, it's completely risk-free. You can just prop up your old mattress against your wall. Casper will ship you the new mattress. And you have 100 nights to try it out. And if you decide in that time that you don't like the Casper, it's not for you, Casper will pick it up for free and return 100% of your money. So you have absolutely nothing to lose. Give it a shot. Check it out at casper.com/cultcast. You can read more about it. Check out the reviews. And if you're ready to buy one, use code cultcast at checkout. You'll save $50 on any order. Casper.com/cultcast, and the code to use at checkout is cultcast. Alrighty. I have a confession to make to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are going to love this. I actually canceled my MacBook Pro pre-order.
Oh, really?
I canceled it.
Thinking I need to buy one.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's too late. I was like, you should just buy mine from me. But yeah, I just,
You canceled them both? Both of them?
Yeah, both canceled. I've decided that I'm going to wait.
You've been reading all the angsty complaining, the whining?
I have been, but that's not what made me cancel it. And before we go into this, I just want to say, I don't think Apple's doomed. I still want the new MacBook Pro. But what it came down to for me was I bought it and I just didn't feel very good about my purchase. And I think it's because Apple hiked the prices up so high. They increased the prices $400 to $500 across 13 and 15 inch models. I just didn't feel good. I was looking at how much money I spent and I was like, I should be more excited than I am for having just spent almost $3,000 on a laptop, right? And then I started looking at comparable products in the PC marketplace to see what kind of, you know, hardware was being put into those PCs. And the Macs are always not really on par with similarly priced PC products, and I'm okay with that. But because the price was so high, it really kind of made me have more of a critical eye on what I was actually getting. And then I started looking into benchmarks and stuff. And if you guys want, we can get into some of the benchmarks for the CPU and the GPU.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
And I just was like, I just, for what I am doing in my life, for the computer that I already have, the new MacBook Pro really isn't that much more of an upgrade over what I already have. It's not $3,000 better than what I already have. So finally, I just was like, I'm going to cancel it and just kind of wait it out. And I will make an argument today that if you really want a MacBook Pro, but you can wait, you're going to have a much better deal next year. If you get one next year, I think next year's model is going to address a lot of the issues that I'm going to point out about the MacBook Pro. And at least I hope so.
Oh, the complaining has been crazy, isn't it? I mean, it just will not die down. And you said, it's not just like people aren't complaining just about the MacBook. They're complaining also about the lack of updates, you know, from the rest of the Mac line, of course. Mm-hmm. They're complaining about the lack of compatibility with the iPhone, you know, the fact that you can't plug the iPhone doesn't come with a cable that you can plug into your MacBook. And it's, you know, it's this narrative is like, you know, Apple has taken its eye off the ball. It's fractured. It's not paying attention to its customers anymore. It's just doing stuff, you know, it's prioritizing these unimportant things like lightness and thinness and sacrificing, you know, pro performance. And it's, you know, it's not a machine that's designed for a pro. You know, it's like, have they even been looking at what pros do with these machines, with their computers? No, you know, they've been trying to make as thin and as light a laptop as they can. A pro-ish one. So, the complaints have been spreading, and it's just getting worse and worse. And, of course, it's a harbinger of doom, isn't it? You know, it's like, you know, this really is, Apple is doomed. I've even seen people saying they're going to switch to Windows because they like the look of that.
For a split second, I was looking at the new Razer Windows laptops. Razer makes beautiful hardware.
Wow.
And they're just cramming in the best of the best hardware-wise, and they're the same price as Apple's MacBook Pros. So for a split second, I was like, man, that is a sexy mofo.
I saw a Razer that was powering a VR rig. I went to this thing at the weekend, Adam Savage's tested thing. So they had three of these machines. Two were Razers, one was an Acer, I think. They were absolutely huge. They looked like suitcases that have been like opened up and stuck on the table. And I'm sure they're powerful, but you know, it's not a laptop.
They've got some smaller ones too. They've got some smaller ones as well that aren't quite as powerful as the one you're probably looking at, the 17 inch, which is supposed to be a desktop replacement. But Razer also makes some really sleek, svelte models that aren't as powerful as a desktop, but are way more powerful than normal laptops are.
And how much more powerful are they than these new MacBooks? Because these new MacBooks aren't that bad, are they? They're not cutting edge like the most powerful laptops you can get, but
yeah,
they're definitely sort of upper middle, right?
I think that actually should have been Apple's new slogan for the MacBook Pros. They're not that bad, you know? Like, yeah. The performance isn't that bad, and that really kind of sums it up, I think, right there, is they're not bad. They're just not as good as a lot of people would have expected in a $3,000 professional grade laptop. Now, I will say this also as another caveat. Specs aren't everything. We see Android putting out phones, you know, every year that have specs that look like they should blow the iPhone out of the water, you know, horsepower wise. And then we see different benchmark tests, and the iPhone outperforms them, you know, year after year after year, because Apple optimizes all their hardware to work together along with their software. So they're not necessarily, you know, concerned with just putting out raw horsepower. You know, they're more the Apple machines are more refined. It's more like, I don't know, BMW compared to like an American muscle car or something, right? So let me just go into some of the specs and some of the things that helped me arrive at my decision besides what I've already communicated here. So first and foremost, CPU. So the new CPUs used in the MacBook Pros are Skylake processors, which are processors that were released a year ago. So right out of the gate, you're getting a processor that's a year old. And this isn't Apple's fault. They wanted to release a computer, and Intel's new processors, I think they're called Kaby Lake or Kaby Lake, they're not due out until January of 2017, so Apple couldn't use them. And there's another processor generation after that also due in 2017 called Cannon Lake. So if you wait a year, you're going to probably get a MacBook Pro with a processor that is two generations newer than what is out right now because it's at the end of its life cycle. And I want to give a shout out to Felix. I think his last name is Schwartz. And he did this exhaustive benchmarking of a 2012 MacBook Pro versus a 2016. So we have a lot of these metrics that I'm about to tell you based upon his tests. And he said, based upon the Geekbench scores, a 2012 model versus a 2016, the 2016 is only going to be about 30% increase in overall performance over 2012 model. So I have a 2013 model. So I'm like, man, if a 2012 is only going to have a 30% delta, mine's probably only going to be like 25% or 20%. That's not enough for me. Going on to GPU, and this is probably where most of the people are really not happy. Apple has never been known to put, you know, insanely powerful GPUs into their computers. They're not known to be gaming machines. And I'm okay with that. But now that they're really high priced, you start to compare them with similarly priced PCs, and there's a big discrepancy. So according to Felix Schwartz's test, you'll get 100 to 180% increase in GPU performance in the 2016 machine over the 2012 machine. The GPU used in the 2016 machine is an AMD Pro 400 series chip. It's designed for low power consumption, and it's a four-year-old architecture. So that's going to annoy some people. It's right on its face. It's a mobile version of a budget graphics card, so it's even less powerful than a budget desktop graphics card. AMD claims it's thinnest graphics processor possible. Like, really? That's your tagline? It's thin? Right?
Yeah, but that brought Apple, you know, yeah, running exactly. to the door, didn't it?
I mean, was just drooling over exactly. that tagline.
Look how that was Phil Schiller. Look how thin it is. It was catnip. Bob Mansfield was in the background just giving a thumbs up.
Right. It's total catnip for Apple, for Johnny Ive.
Yeah. It's thin. It's light. It's probably made out of aluminium.
But these are good. I mean, you know, there's an argument to be made that you know that's a reasonable feature that people should be thinking about,
and it's also built for battery life.
So, right, exactly. So, that is exactly the point.
Yeah,
that's exactly it. This thing gets a lot of battery life, right? And I mean, you can get I've had souped up, you know, laptops before, and the battery life sucks. It stinks. There's compromises, aren't there, in every single thing they've put into this thing.
So and that was definitely what Apple was designing for, was battery life. And AMD says this graphics card is ideal for artists, designers, photographers, filmmakers, visualizers. I don't even know what that means. But you'll notice nowhere does it say gamers or people who do a lot of graphics intensive work. And here is people's main gripe. This is the crux of the issue. NVIDIA has an insane mobile GPU lineup currently. And their budget card, the GTX 1060, their budget mobile card performs at 4.2 teraflops a second. That may mean nothing to you, and that's okay. But in comparison, the top-of-the-line graphics card offered in the new MacBook Pro, the AMD Pro 460, only operates at 1.8 teraflops a second. So if you're just I mean, a simple way to look at it, right, is the GTX 1060, the budget card, the NVIDIA budget card, is twice as powerful as AMD's most powerful mobile solution. So that's a bummer, man, for a $3,000 laptop. I mean, that's just kind of a bummer, man. I don't really know how else to say it. Can I put my robe on and you guys can call me the dude? Because it's just a bummer, man.
Well, you know, but these are specs, right? They're numbers. And I know this is different for a pro machine, but, you know, like, I don't think anybody buys an iPhone based upon the speed of the chip or... you know, how much the speed of the RAM storage or the speed of the Broadcom, you know, Wi-Fi chips,
right?
You know, Apple customers have typically been, the mainstream Apple customers have been sort of spec blind, right? They're not so concerned with getting the highest spec stuff, and Apple sort of definitely downplays that, doesn't it? They want to get into this megahertz race where people are buying Pure in these specs. And if you look at this machine, I mean, you can power two 5K monitors as well as its own screen, right? Two external 5K monitors. That's an astonishing amount of GPU power. So, you know, maybe they're not as fast as the fastest ones on the spec sheet, but aren't they fast enough? Aren't they powerful enough for most things that most graphic professionals would want to do?
Well, I think that's the big question, and that's going to have to be what we find out. And that's one of the reasons why I decided to wait. Because, again, we're reading off all these specs, and they can sound discouraging, but, you know, as you just said, you don't really know until you get the machine and you see how it operates as a whole. And, I mean, to your point, even Apple said when they were doing the keynotes that you can expect 130% better 3D graphics performance over a 2015 model, 60% better gaming performance, and 57% better video editing performance. 3D graphics and video, anyway, are probably what most people are going to be using the MacBook Pro for, especially video editing. And I know paired with Final Cut Pro, especially the new Final Cut Pro, which unfortunately I don't think we're going to have time to go into today, but this is going to be an insane video editing machine, and that's primarily why I want one. So, yeah, you can't really just go on specs alone. And I'm glad that you're presenting the other side of this, Lander, because
right,
I think that's an important perspective to keep as well.
Mike Elgin, you know, who used to be was a weekend columnist and who's been a long time, you know, tech columnist, has always, I think, has got a good considered opinion. You know, he was raving about the new MacBooks Pro, mm-hmm. And saying that, you know, this is a very bold step in the evolution of the laptop. You know, Apple has done away with a bunch of ridiculously legacy ports, escape keys, function keys. You know, and stuck in, you know, fingerprint readers and you know, biometrics into the and this touch bar, you know, in a way that's really pushing the evolution of the machine in a way that only Apple really does. You know, Apple is the only company that really has and I hate to say this, to use Phil Schiller's word, the courage to do this kind of stuff. And, you know, I know that there's been kicking and screaming every single time they do this, you know, the headphone jack and the iMac and the floppy drive and stuff like that. You know, when you look back, it does look ridiculous, doesn't it? That people were complaining about these kind of things. And you know, this one seems to be, is more vociferous, isn't it? People are much more upset about this, I think, because there's a whole bunch of different factors that are getting factored in. But if you look at the MacBook Pros, you know, in isolation, like Mike says, you know, it is a pretty compelling vision of a modern laptop, I think.
I think it is too.
After reading that, I was more excited about them.
And I think in a year, and this is something I was going to bring up later, in a year, I think some of the issues that I bring up with the machine aren't going to be issues anymore, specifically peripherals, having to, you know, use USB-C peripherals and things like that, because there's just going to be more of that stuff available, but there's not right now. So I'm getting ahead of myself here. Let me continue a little bit more about some of the other issues, and I think we're going to address some of the stuff that you just talked about. So I was going to say nickel and dimed as my third point. I just feel like we're getting nickel and dimed, and especially when I heard that Apple's no longer including a power brick extension cable, you know, the one that plugs into the wall. I was like, really? You're going to make me pay $19 for that freaking cable that you used to cable, do for free?
Right, that I never use. It's stuck in a drawer
I use mine all the time. In fact, if you're not using yours, will you send it to me? No, I don't need it. But it's something that I think is useful. And to charge $20 for it, you already raised the prices $400 to $500. Is that not enough money for you? You can't. It's like when you go to like a nice restaurant. And they charge $5 for a Coke and they won't give you a free refill because they're a nice restaurant, but the McDonald's down the street gives you free refills, right? It's like, what?
Just
toss me a freaking bone here. Toss me a bone. And then there's the dongles, and the USB-C ports are great. In a year, those might be all that you need, but they're not right now. And I feel like Apple could have just included two USB ports in addition to what they already have on their computers. Just regular USB. Because everyone still has USB.
Come on.
Think how many USB devices that you have laying around. And they're not going anywhere. They're not going to go anywhere for years. They may never go away. And Apple's, they're in an effort to be pioneering, I think that they kind of took it a little bit too far. They could have at least given you one of each. Don't you think? Like,
no,
why
only
they give you an adapter, bro?
Right.
But then you need an adapter for every single device. Like,
I feel like we have this argument every time Apple comes out with a new product where they change the ports. It's like everybody clings to the ports so much. And Apple has to do that in order to get innovation moving forward so that you're not stuck with USB-C ports for the rest of your life.
Right.
I think that's true for technologies that are obviously on their way out. I don't think USB-3 ports are on their way out. They're not going anywhere. And so I think a majority of the devices that you're going to see for years are going to be USB 3 in the majority. I don't see most people switching to USB-C. Maybe I'm going to be wrong. But you know, the PC market is bigger
with an
than
adapter.
What's that?
Easily solved with an adapter, though.
Well, that's Apple's point, too. Yeah, and you're right. It is easily solved with an adapter. But now you've got to buy
it. I know you're like, oh, no, I got to have an adapter, and it is ugly. But eventually, in the future, you won't have to have an adapter.
Well, I hope you're right.
And then
I hope
you
you're
will
right.
have an adapter when Apple moves on to the next thing.
Right, and you'll have one cord, right, which is reversible and which is the same at both ends. You know,
yeah.
it'll bring your cord management way down.
It's like it's always going to be changing, so you're always going to have dongles and stuff. I feel like.
Well, this one I think might stick. Right, there's a big argument that this is the one sort of port to rule them all. Mm-hmm. That Thunderbolt 3, which incorporates USB-C, is finally, you know, a flexible and fast and powerful enough port that, you know, it does so many different things. It does power, data, it runs monitors, you know, hard drives, it can be daisy chained. Most of the new Android phones use it for charging. There's rumors that Apple might move to it for the iPhone, right? Finally ditching the Lightning jack. And if everything, you know, this might be finally the one port that everybody standardizes on.
I hope you're right. I hope everyone moves to USB-C peripherals too and USB-C monitors. You got to look at it from a larger, I think you got to take a step back and look at the whole marketplace, because it's not just Apple, right? There's the PC market. And why would the PC market move to USB-C when USB 3 is so ubiquitous
Apple forces
already?
Them. This is what I think Apple does not get enough credit for forcing the PC industry to like shake it up and move step forward. I mean, if you look at like a bunch of, like, you know, if you look at a lot of PCs, they keep those legacy ports because they, especially the ones that are sold to business customers, right? Because business customers are so conservative, they don't want to be forced to upgrade. They don't want to be forced to, like, get new equipment. They want to keep this stuff around and going for as long as possible to get the maximum return on their investment. And so, you know, they used to be, like, they were comically loaded up. Like, you know, the standard printer port, right? I mean, that stuck around for decades. Mm-hmm. And wasn't moved on. You know, it's only because Apple moved to USB with the iMac that the USB actually even took off in the first place, right? Intel had invented it, but no one had picked it up until Apple picked it up with the iMac, and then the iMac was a giant hit, so then USB took off because of Apple, because of the iMac. Same with Wi-Fi, right? They definitely, you know, Wi-Fi is because of Apple adopting it as a standard for, you know, for their computers. So Apple's doing the tech industry a huge favor, and Apple's customers are the ones that scream, and the transition is always painful because we are definitely in a transition period. So it does, you know, inflict pain points.
See, but I'm not sure we are in a transitionary period. I think that's my issue with removing the ports is it's like Thunderbolt. Apple makes a play for Thunderbolt, and the PC industry doesn't go there. And USB 3 is still the king of ports. And so Apple moves to USB-C ports only. And I just wonder if peripheral manufacturers are gonna go that way as well, or if they're just gonna continue using USB 3 and they're gonna force you to buy a dongle, you know, to interface with your Mac. That is a very viable option, and that might be what ends up happening because Apple just isn't gonna have the power to push them in any other direction because they're such a small, you know, share of the marketplace.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. They used to be, but not, you know, Apple was one of the, it's managed to claw its way back up to the top five PC manufacturers, right? When they weren't even in the top 10.
But they're still in a minority. I mean, they are more popular than they were, you know, years ago, but aren't they only like 14% of the entire marketplace? Maybe even less.
Well, true enough. I mean, so if you add up all the other ones, but I think, you know, they've shown in the past with even smaller market share, they've shown that they have this, you know, huge market power. And get people and will, you know, drag the entire industry along with them, and I think they're even more powerful now than they used to be. I don't think there's any doubt that the rest of the industry will fall into line.
Okay, well I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I genuinely hope that you're right because, like I said, I am planning on buying this MacBook Pro. I'm just probably going to get one next year.
Well, you read, yeah, because you read that ridiculous rumor, right? That it's gonna, everything's going to be fixed next year.
Oh yeah.
Yes, and we'll get to that.
I'm talking about wishful thinking.
Well, I do think they're going to drop the prices eventually.
I think
we could talk about this now. So there was a rumor that came out that they're going to address some of these issues next year, right, Buster?
Yeah, they're going to fix the 32 gigabytes of RAM and the crazy price point.
And this is from
Ming-Chi Kuo, right?
Ming-Chi Kuo, yes.
Analyst extraordinaire, never wrong.
Except, you know, sometimes he's totally wrong.
You know. But 60% of the time, he's right every time.
Yeah,
right. And it's funny that this. What was funny about this rumor to me was that it was concerned with all of the things that people were complaining about. Right, the RAM, the price.
Well, yeah, two of the biggest things, and the RAM has to do more with, as I understand it, the Intel CPUs that they're currently using. I don't know if they don't support more RAM or if there's some issue there, but the Cannon Lake CPUs, which are due out in 2017, which are probably what Apple will switch to on the next MacBook Pro, supports 32 gigabytes of RAM. So that might fix the problem right there. And then the price cut, I think they're going to have to drop the price. And they probably will.
Yeah.
We talked about this last week. I mean, they release new technology. They jump up the price. People who can't afford it will. People who can't will, you know, complain and commiserate together, and then, you know, it will drop and they'll get on board, which, you know, I think is probably what I'll end up doing too. I mean, the price is a big deal too. It really, like I said, it makes you focus on what you're actually getting. When you're looking at a $3,000 PC, or excuse me, $3,000 Mac, it's like, man, $3,000, right? Like, do I really need to spend this money?
Oh, no way. I mean, I've been thinking about maybe getting the 2015 MacBook Pro instead. But yeah. Did those get a price drop at all?
No.
No, so, yeah. If those had, then that would be...
And we didn't even talk about this last week. That was an unusual move as well, because normally the new PC, the new Mac supplants the old Mac. The old Mac gets a price drop. But as far as I've seen, I haven't seen any price drops, and Apple's still offering the 2015 Mac as an option, a less expensive option. And they're keeping it the same price because they bumped up the price of the 2016 MacBook Pro.
They know what's going on, though, right? They know that everyone's going to be buying those.
Right? Yeah, they're like, people are going to be so pissed about the new price. We can sell a ton of 2015s. And actually, I was looking on eBay. If you want a 2015 MacBook Pro, man, people are trying to get rid of their MacBook Pros to get the new one. So you can get some great prices on the 2015 MacBook Pro. And a lot of them have AppleCare, you know, warranties on them, so you can be sure there's nothing wrong with them. So that's an option for you as well. So I guess to sum up, if you're willing to wait, you're going to get probably a two generation newer CPU if you wait till the next year's MacBook Pro, because Skylake, which is what is being used now, is already a year old. There's going to be a lot more availability of USB-C and Thunderbolt 3 technology if you wait. You'll probably get lower price points in a year. The touch bar will probably have the bugs worked out. I'm imagining there's going to be some bugs in the first 6 months that they're going to need to iron out.
Plus,
and
tons
also,
of apps.
I'm guessing you're going to get, what was that, Buster?
Well, tons of apps will finally support it.
You'll get that too. As well.
Like,
exactly.
It's going to take developers a while.
Yeah, it might take them a year, actually, too, to really kind of figure out what they're going to do. I mean, Apple's been working on the touch bar for, what, 3 years?
Yeah, so they've had a lot longer to think about what it's going to be useful for.
And I think the reason they were working on it for 3 years is because they were saying that they really wanted to make sure that they were utilizing the touch bar in a useful way.
Right. Well, they were obviously trying to. I think they were definitely building prototype touchscreen MacBooks, and they were experimenting with that. I mean, if you're reading between the lines of those Phil Schiller and Johnny Ive interviews, they found it was awful. Right. It just didn't work.
Yeah, they said they tried making a touchscreen MacBook a long time ago.
I find touchscreen PCs totally pointless. I don't understand why people... I've seen people making a big deal out of that. And they're like, oh man, why didn't you just go full touchscreen? There's a total cop-out. But I don't understand the big draw for a touchscreen Mac. I mean, first of all, you're always going to have fingerprints all over your screen, which is totally gross.
Bro.
It's so gross. And I think that having the touch bar perpendicular to your hand, where your finger can just go up and down on it, is a much more elegant way to implement a touch control on your computer.
But haven't you ever reached out for it to try to touch your screen? you do it out of total, man.
I'm super sensitive to it. I call people who do that screen touchers, and I'm like, get your freaking fingers off my screen. You know, like when someone's trying to point to something on your screen. And they're like, hey, it's right there. And they're like pointing in, they're touching your screen with your finger. I get visibly repulsed when people do that. I'm like, you don't need, just hover, man. That's all you need to do. Just hover your finger. I can see it's right there. Just hover. You don't need to actually touch my freaking screen. You should never touch another man's screen.
And then he slam it shut on their fingers and cut him off.
Blood sprays everywhere. You never touch another man's screen. If there's one thing that you come away with from this episode, it should be that. Keep your fat fingers off my screen.
Right. Well, do you think that you were tweeting about the new Surface, right? The Microsoft Surface.
Yeah.
And saying that, you know, it looks good in the demo, but you're suspicious that there might be.
I am suspicious. Yeah.
Performance
Microsoft,
issues, right?
I think, is on the right path. They're headed in the right direction. They're doing what Apple's doing. They're creating their own hardware with their own software, and I think that's the way to go. But my friends who have the Surface Book, they all have problems with it. I mean, annoying, consistent hardware problems, not software problems. At least it doesn't seem like it's software. And so for me, I look at the Surface Studio, which is gorgeous. It's that new Mac, iMac-looking computer that Microsoft released last week with a display that rotates up and down. It looks amazing, and I think there's a lot of innovation in the design of that computer and the way you interface with it. But let's see how it works. Let's wait till it actually comes out. Not to mention that thing also has a majorly underpowered GPU. And so it has its own issues, right? And it's, you know, $4,200. So it's not going to be for everyone. I was going to mention this one last point about waiting till next year. Cheaper SSDs. Apple has slashed the prices of SSDs on virtually all their Macs right now. So if you want to upgrade to an SSD, it's a larger SSD. It's a lot cheaper now than it was 2 weeks ago. And that will probably be something that Apple does, I think, you know, if you wait a year, because they're going to try and make it more appealing. Again, I don't think Apple's doomed. I'm not pissed off at Apple. I'm just looking at my needs, and I'm looking at all the peripherals I already have, and I'm looking at all the dongles and new cables and new hard drives and monitors and stuff, and that I would have to buy to make everything interface with a new MacBook Pro, and for a meager improvement in power from what I already have, it's just simply not worth it for me. Your calculation might be different, and I applaud you, sir. If you go out and you buy one and you have $3,000 to spend, and your computer's, you know, 5 years old, or you have a 2015 and you just want to upgrade because you got mad cash, that's great. I'm happy for you. Buy me one too, would you? Because I would love to have this machine. I'm just not willing to pay, you know, $3,000 for it. And I get why people are pissed. You know, we had a lot of anticipation, didn't we? There's no one on this planet who was more excited than a MacBook Pro than me. Nobody. I have been waiting anxiously for a year And I hate to wait. I don't want to wait, but this isn't exactly what I wanted. This is a machine for early adopters. I don't want to be an early adopter again. I've done that before. It's too expensive, and I don't want to end up with a bag full of dongles.
So are you going to Windows or?
So I'm
Linux.
I'm going to Windows, and I hope you'll all come listen to my new Windows podcast, the best Windows podcast you're going to hear. Oh, it blue screened.
Right. You can always build yourself a Hackintosh as well, right?
I thought about doing that, yeah. But then you lose all the security updates. And then you end up with a lot of the Windows problems that you would end up with.
I think the newest software stuff takes care of a lot of that, right? You can update with, there's a tool, isn't there? A software?
Oh, is
there
kind really?
Of installer? I think so. I mean, I haven't looked for a while, and I've never actually done it. I did it years ago with a... what do they call those netbooks? With a cheap netbook,
uh-huh.
Like a $300 netbook, and I had to install. I did, you know, but this was a long time ago, like 10 years ago or more. But I think the latest software. I think you can install the latest updates, and it won't mess everything up.
I've been reading a lot of these people who are pissed about Apple's Mac decisions, mm-hmm. and one of the guys was bemoaning what Apple had done. He was wishing for the days that Apple just outsourced their OS. to different manufacturers, and I was like,
the
"Hey,
clones,
you know,
yeah,
I, you know, if someone released a great clone with PC hardware and it was just a powerhouse, you might get me. I might be willing to throw down some ducats for that."
Yeah, come on, Tim Cook, let's go back to the old clone days.
Think how much money you can make. Because you don't want to move to Windows, right? That's the part that is frustrating, I think, for a lot of people, is what are you going to do? You don't want another machine. You want a Mac. But you want a Mac that is right for you. There's nowhere for you to go. If Apple doesn't make the device that you want, there's nothing for you to do. You're not going to go to Windows. Come on. I mean, some of you might. Some of you might. But I can't, you know, and I don't want to. I don't want to do that. I just want to whine and complain until Apple gives me what I want selfishly. But regardless, they're selling a ton of these. I mean, didn't Phil Schiller just say this is the most pre-orders they've ever had for a Mac ever?
Well, sure, but I mean, they haven't updated forever, so like there's a, you know, glut of demand.
That's probably also
it is pretty remarkable. At the price points, you know, though, that if that, you know, that's true, because it's what you know. 1300, 1500, you know, base price.
$17.99 for the 13.
Yeah, and you know, how much are Windows laptops? I mean, they're at least half of that, right?
Oh man, you could get a great Windows laptop for $800, and one that is probably more powerful spec wise than the MacBook Pro, because they're making Windows laptops with the newest Intel processors already, and they just didn't have a version that was comparable to what Apple offers, so Apple couldn't build one in. Anyway, I don't want to complain too much. I just wanted to offer you all that information that I use to make my decision. I don't think Apple's doomed. I just want to reiterate that. Some of you are going to be pissed that we're, you know, hating. Talking negatively about Apple's new MacBook Pro. And I wish I didn't have to be here giving you the message. I'm just the messenger here. And some of you aren't going to care. You're going to buy it anyway, and that's great. You're going to enjoy it regardless, I'm sure. But let's talk about some other major news items this week. This is crazy. And the fact that no one is really talking about this is a little surprising to me, because it's kind of the end of an era. And that is the fact that on the new MacBook Pros, there is no F-sharp startup sound anymore. It's gone. Apple has done away with it. Right, Buster?
But you can bring it back. I don't know. I didn't look at the how-to. I just saw that, yeah, you can bring it back.
So it's easy enough. You just go into Terminal, and actually I'll link to the post that shows you how to go ahead and do that if you get a new MacBook Pro. But that F-sharp sound, that arpeggioed chord that you hear, that iconic sound, was first introduced in the 1990s sometime, maybe even earlier, maybe like 1985 or something, and it has been on every Mac since then, and Apple device as well. They've built that sound into other Apple devices, and so it's kind of sad just to see it go. I mean, maybe that's just me being nostalgic. Does this bother anybody else? Leander, I mean, you've been around since the beginning. You were there. You were there at the event when Steve Jobs announced the first Mac, right? You were in your late 40s and you were just sitting there thinking, wow.
Yeah, it's I don't miss it really. I mean, it is iconic.
Not even
and it's
a little.
Definitely was part of the, well, do you remember when they you know, you used to be greeted with a little smiley face too, with a little smiley face Mac.
I do miss that.
And yeah, right, exactly. Now it's a slick, you know, sort of Apple silhouette.
Yeah.
The chime, there's a good reason though they got rid of the chime, right? Which is that it boots the minute you open the lid.
Yeah, so I wonder if there's not going to be a power button to turn it on. If you just open it and that's how you turn it on.
Yeah, I guess, you know, you shut it down and then you close the lid and then when you open the lid, it comes back on. And it's only a few seconds slower than if you'd left it on all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's one of those new hybrid cars, you know, where the engine shuts down when it's mm-hmm. sitting at the stoplight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's obviously going to drive people crazy if it starts beeping every time they open and close their lids. Right. So, you know, there seems to be a good reason for it. It's not that much of a loss. I'm not really that sentimental. I mean, I think this thing has brought out the sentimentality, right? Like crazy.
Yeah.
People are so sentimental for all these things that they really aren't going to miss.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. The glowing just... Mac logo, too, or Apple logo.
Hold on. That's blasphemy.
Because that was
I
already killed with
love
the...
that glowing Mac logo. It has nothing to do with vanity. I don't care about...
But you never
like,
see it, so it is all about vanity, right?
Because no, that's when not you're true. Using, I see it all the time.
When
I
you're
see
using
it all the time.
Your own MacBook, though, you don't see it, so it's not
no,
a feature
no.
that is pertinent to you in any way.
You clearly
it is
don't
only
know
for
how
advertising.
I use my MacBook. I face the screen away from me, and okay. then I look over the top of it.
Use a mirror.
I have an elaborate system of mirrors, so the keyboard looks right side up in the mirrors, and that's how I type. So now you feel stupid, don't you?
You know what people complain when they actually flip the Apple logo? Because it used to be upside down, so that it was facing you when the laptop was closed.
Really?
And then when you opened up the lid, it would be upside down, and there was a huge debate about that.
Well, because on All the Time, you would see it in Sex and the City. All the time, every shot was her typing on the laptop with the Apple logo upside down. And I think that was actually one of the reasons why Steve Jobs eventually had it flipped.
Was that makes
was
no
tired.
Sense.
No,
it makes
because
way
he
more
was
sense
tired
to have
of
it right side up.
Like, no, it makes more sense to have it displayed because, again, you're not looking at it ever other than when you're opening the laptop. It's on display outside for everybody else. So it should be right side up facing outward.
But every once in a while, I'll have my laptop sitting somewhere right, and I walk away from it maybe to get a cuppa, Leander. Uh-huh. And I come back, right, and there she is, glowing, waiting. And I'm like, look at my beautiful machine. It's like, even though you may not see it all the time, when you do, it's so pleasing to just see that effervescent glow from that Apple logo off the back of your machine. It's just, it's a beautiful design. And I think it is much more creative than just a stainless steel logo.
You could get one of those glow-in-the-dark stickers.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I was just
going to
say
logo.
Same thing. The next Cultcast, you know, product is going to be a glow in the dark sticker.
We'll just get a freaking bottle of paint from the arts and crafts store, and it comes with a little paintbrush, and you can just paint it yourself. And that way, and then every night you can, or every day you can charge it. Just leave it outside.
Just leave it in the sun all day. Yeah.
That's right. I don't know. It's just one of those design choices that I don't know if they meant to get rid of. Or if they had to get rid of it, or if they were just flipping about it. Like another perfect example. So I didn't mention this earlier, but Phil Schiller was talking about getting rid of the SD card slots and keeping the 3.5 millimeter headphone jack. And he said they kept the 3.5 millimeter headphone jack because it's a pro machine. Okay. But they got rid of the SD card slot because it's quote unquote cumbersome, best left to adapters or wireless transfers. It's like, what?
I mean,
it just
kind of
seems like it was just a flippant decision. Like, no one needs that. Let's just get rid of it.
The one thing that was nice about the SD card was you could use it also to expand your memory, you know, with those little, but I don't know, having an adapter is not that bad. I use that. That's all I can use on my iPad. Pro is a little SD card adapter to import pictures. So
you're already
used
to it.
And that's fine.
I guess as somebody who uses the SD card slot all the time, and if you have a camera, which many people do, it's so convenient to be able to just pull your card out and put it into your MacBook without having to go fetch your adapter.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not as convenient. And again, it's a little thing, but it's like if Apple didn't need to get rid of it, it seems as though they just got rid of it because, oh, no one really needs that anymore, so let's just get rid of it. It's like, no, dude, I need it.
Yeah.
I need it, Phil.
Maybe they could have done like a micro SD card reader.
That would have been cool.
That would have been dope because now like those are pretty popular and I have a few that just fit into a regular SD card. So they go into your camera and you can just pull that in and put it in your Mac. That would.
I mean, and while they're at it, just toss a couple USB 3 ports on there. Right? I mean, just make them small and conspicuous out of the way. It's like just toss them on there. Who cares? Oh my gosh. We should probably at least mention this before we wrap up. There was talk about a new display. Well, there was talk about so much at the Hello event. At the Hello Again event, right? New Macs, which didn't appear, but one of the things was a official Apple display. And I think they're officially dead. Isn't that right, Buster?
So dead.
So if you're waiting for a new Apple display, I think, Apple's introduction of an LG display on stage, that was kind of telling, right? I mean, when they started introducing an LG display, you're like, wait, what? Like an LG display? So Apple introduced LG worked with Apple to create an LG 5K ultrafine display that interfaces with your Mac. And didn't they say that you can control like the brightness and stuff with the buttons on your Mac, Buster?
Yeah.
So you can control some of the aspects of the monitor with your Mac as you would be able to with a Apple Cinema Display or something. But it's not made by Apple. It's made by LG. It's 27 inches and it's $1,300 for a 27 inch display. So if you want an Apple native display, that's what you're going to have to do. And Nilay Patel, who was at the Hello Again event, said he spoke with Apple and he was asking them about the new display. And he was asking them if they were going to be releasing their own display. And surprisingly, they gave him a straightforward answer. And they said, it's out of the standalone display biz, quote unquote. Apple is out of the standalone display biz. So if you've been waiting for an Apple display, well, you're going to be waiting a long time. Maybe they'll change their mind eventually. Who knows? I mean, they could come back with an Apple display in like 5 years. Maybe they're trying to figure something out. Or maybe they're out forever. I don't know. We could also get a new Newton. I mean, anything's possible.
Right. The Newton's going to be back. They've been in and out of these businesses forever, haven't they?
Right.
I'm kind of worried about their time capsules. What's going to happen to that? Because I use that a lot. And that
they
was actually a really
out of their
great
stores,
product.
Didn't they?
They have.
Didn't they pull the time capsules out of their stores? Or are they back in now?
This was like last year, wasn't it?
Maybe they're back in there. I don't know.
I don't know.
But you want them to update them. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, because, you know, I've been using a Luma. My screen suddenly went really loud. I've been using, Luma and testing.
You like a mesh routing system?
Aero, yeah, the mesh routing system. So I've been testing both of these. And, you know, you get, instead of getting one router that you put in the center of the house, you get three routers.
Yeah.
That you put one at the front, one at the back, or upstairs and downstairs. And they use mesh. So it's not like a regular extender. It's a mesh network that creates the Wi-Fi network. And they're much, much better. They're super, you know, they're sort of self-healing. If anything goes wrong, if, you know, there's interference, they'll fix it automatically. And it seems to be it's a much better system than, you know, than having one router. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Apple, I can't see Apple following this. I mean, you know, it's probably so small.
They've got the Airport Expresses. I mean, maybe they could work something out with that.
Yeah, change the hardware. But, you know, I think it's like another example of like, you know, something that the iPhone business is so big and so important that all their resources are going into that. And all this other stuff is falling by the wayside. I definitely think there's something to be said for that, isn't there? This is why these updates are taking so long. You know, for
that
the
MacBooks. Definitely could be it. I mean, Apple is stretched so thin, and sometimes I wonder if they have the resources they need to really be involved.
Well,
they definitely don't.
And in fact, you know, there was a lot of speculation that the car project is actually pulling people off. I wrote about the iPhone development, and that was one of the big issues. It was like they knew that Steve Jobs knew that making the iPhone, they were going to have to pull a lot of people, key people, into this project. You know, and then it was, and it could have taken years. You know, it eventually it took. what was it, four or five years to develop the iPhone. Behind the scenes, you know, and in the meantime, they were worried whether it was going to actually affect, you know, their ongoing businesses, whether they would actually able to keep up with all the updates they need to do to keep the business alive while they were developing this product, this untested, unproven, you know, risky product in the background.
That's incredible. If you think about it, I mean, a company that is Apple size, which with as much money as they have, as much power as they have, their biggest problem is they can't get as many smart people as they need.
Well, it's not that. I think it's managing it. It's like, it's making sure that you keep it, you know, focused and you keep a handle on it. And it looks like that's what's going wrong with this car project. I mean, you know, it looks like they hired a lot of people and it's gotten out of hand. You know, it's not going in the direction they wanted it to.
You're talking about Project Titan.
Yeah, Project Titan.
Yeah, because didn't they at one point, the rumor was that they had 1,000 people working on that. And they were pulling people from all over Apple to try to build this thing.
Right, yeah, and they were hiring tons of people from the outside. I mean, they've been doing that for the Apple Watch, too. I mean, look at all the health and fitness experts they've been hiring.
Right.
So, yeah, they've, you know, and I think what happens is it just becomes sort of impossible to keep a handle on this stuff, you know, to make sure that people are really doing really, really good work. And to just, you know, sort of for the Tim and the executive team to, like, they've got so many balls in the air that, you know, it's not a question of, you know, the more people you hire, more headaches you've got to manage.
That's a good point. And they got to look at priorities, right? I mean, people aren't buying a whole lot of the time capsules or not buying the Mac minis. Like, those aren't making Apple a ton of money.
No.
They got to put resources where the cash is coming in.
Right. Definitely. It's a functional organization. So they used to have product managers for all these different products. I'm sure they must still do, but you know, I don't know how much autonomy they have to make decisions themselves. Like, you know, the Mac Mini, what's the Mac Mini product manager doing? He's probably a sad, you know, he probably comes in. He's like the guy in the basement, right, with a stapler, you know, he's just sitting in his cube every day, like just collecting
really
his
funny.
Paycheck.
I wonder if they even have people working on the Mac Mini, you know, like, is anyone's job title to even update the Mac Mini or look into updating the Mac Mini?
Right.
Yeah, it just seems like it's just kind of sitting there.
Yeah, but they did. They used to, for sure. You know, they had product managers. I mean, I met the iPod product manager, and they used to, I mean, what do they call it? There's actually a term, the key something responsibility, mm-hmm. KRI, KIR.
This is like Apple's official title for the person?
And everybody has, you know, every project has the person who's responsible, like, you know, the product manager. But I know for a fact that, you know, when they're developing new products, when they're doing, like, Johnny Ive's team, they'll have like a lead designer and maybe a deputy designer, but in general the products are designed by all of the team. You know, they'll all get together two or three times a week and they'll discuss whatever products they're working on. So there'll be someone who'll be sort of responsible for the next iPhone, and they'll be the ones who are talking to the other teams, the other engineering teams, and giving reports to you know, the executives and making sure that the thing is, you know, ticking along. But they'll all work on it together. And I think, you know, and I think that's true of, like, Apple in general, because it's like, you know, they don't have separate divisions for the Mac. They don't have separate divisions for the iPhone. They have a hardware division, right, which takes care of all the hardware. And I think this is probably one of the problems that they're facing, is because, you know, they've gotten so big, and because one product is so disproportionately important to what they do, you know, these other ones are just getting neglected.
It would suck so bad if they, you know, discontinued some of these smaller products that are great products, like the Time Capsule, like the AirPort Extreme router. That is one of the best routers that I've ever owned. And if you own a Mac product particularly, you know, they just work so well together. And you never have problems. Like, every router I've ever owned, it ends up, you know, having issues. You got to restart it constantly. You know, like, you get garbled voices when you do a Skype call or something.
Yeah.
And, like, the freaking Mac router just works. It's just a workhorse. You never have problems with it.
Well, I had the exact opposite experience. You know, they have not worked at all for me.
Oh, I think I remember you saying this. You know what? I kind of wonder maybe if it's user error.
No, I don't think so. I think it's like, you know, it's there's at least a dozen competing networks, you know, from my neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of interference. There's a lot of Wi-Fi signals. It's just, you know, it's a different, it's not an easy environment for this thing to operate in. So
Yeah, I guess in your building especially, you guys, your offices are all so close together.
Yeah, even at home. Has a router. And plus, you know, I mean, we've just been having headaches with all these, the Time Machine backups. It'll work flawlessly for a year, right? And you forget about it. And then suddenly you'll get all these error messages. Oops, you know, something went wrong. We've got to start again. We've got to redo your whole thing over and over again. And for some reason, our machine at home has been doing this like every couple of weeks. It tells you there's some problem with the backup and it wants to do some, you know, wants to start over from scratch.
Ooh, that's a little bit frightening.
Yeah, that's ugly, and I don't know how to fix that either. You know, so
maybe it's a hardware problem.
In fact, if any of the listeners know how to fix that, please hit me up. Yeah, I'd love to know.
Yeah, that'd be great. Because usually when you restart the backup, that fixes those issues. Because I had the same thing happen like a year ago, and then it restarted, and that was it. It never happened.
Yeah, but it's done it several times, like three or four times in a row. So
I kind of wonder if that whole model of backing up to Time Capsule is even something that's is worth doing anymore, because now with all the different online backup software solutions that are out there that are just as good and safer because your backup isn't stored in your house. I wonder if maybe Apple doesn't even need to make a router anymore. I mean, I realize I'm going back on what I just said, but you know, you talk about like the Eero router system that you're using. It's like, that's innovative, right? That's new. Yeah. It's innovative. It seems to be where people are heading. You know, Google's making their own router now.
Right. And there's lots of people that are innovating. Yeah. Yeah.
And I wonder if Apple has the resources to even push their product anymore.
Right. Yeah. I doubt it.
If they're just like, here.
Well, they're going to do what they do with the monitors, right? They're going to say like, this is, you know, it's a $300 million market. It's not even worth our time. You know, we'll just turn it over to
them. Yeah, we make twice that just selling dongles.
Right, exactly. So they'll just turn it over. I think, you know, and that's a smart strategy to do. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that at all. I think that's actually a really good way to do it. Leave the innovation to their partners and work closely with them to make sure everything works well.
You know what Apple needs to do? Man, I'm a genius. I need to go work for Apple. They need to lower the prices of their computers like $1,000 to make them super accessible. But then just release them with ports that no one can use whatsoever, and make all their money on the dongles, man. That's where the money's made. That's the frosting on your cake, man. Just dongle, dongle, dongle. It's like, oh, you want to charge your computer? No problem. Dongle. SD card? Dongle. You want to use the internet? No problem. Dongle. And they're going to make a fortune. It's the business model that Steve Jobs never considered.
Genius.
You heard it here first, folks. Leander thinks I'm a genius. Okay, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. Let's be honest. Isn't that enough? I think we all agree that might be enough. If you want to come tell us what you think about the new MacBook Pros, I honestly would love to hear what your feelings are. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Arafon and Buster's BST3R. Leander is L. Caney. You can also come and contribute your thoughts to the Cultcast Reddit thread. We'll have one stickied right at the top. It's the cultcast.reddit.com. I'll be in there trolling and reading what you guys say. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys and gals. I got some tweets from some ladies today, guys, that listen to the show. I thought it was just one, but apparently there's like four or five.
Okay, cool.
We'll see you guys and gals next time. Gals like us. Guys envious. The gals like us. It's good to be on the Cultcast.
Living the Cultcast vida.
I got a killer Kermit the Frog. I got a pretty decent Arnold Schwarzenegger, which I know you love.
Oh my God, the Arnold Schwarzenegger thing. We were watching Arnold
Put the cookie in the chopper!
Oh my God. Both my sons do it now.
I know, that's why I said that.
Oh my God.
We were watching, I don't even know what that's referring to. Put the cookie in the chopper?
It's a mashup. It's Predator meets... What was that one at Christmas time when he's trying to get some presents for his kids?
He's offering them cookies.
Yeah, what was it called? Oh, shit.
I don't know if I saw that one.
I don't think I've seen it either.
Jingle All the Way. Isn't that what it's called or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Now I want to look this up here. Let's see here. Jingle All the Way. I think that's actually a Tim Allen movie. Oh, no, it's Jingle All the Way. It is. Arnold Schwarzenegger, man. Go me. It got a 17% Rotten Tomatoes score.
Oh, really? It's a stinker. Yeah, no one I've never seen it.
your kids apparently love it.
I watched, what's it called last night? Total Recall.
Oh, new one or the old one?
No, the old one. The new one is just abysmal.
Is it really?
It's completely unwatchable. I watched, like, I was like, how much could they screw it up? And I like Colin Farrell, who I think has been totally amazing in some stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I watched about, I don't know, 20 minutes, and it was just, it was
couldn't even make it through it.
No, wow. It was terrible, terrible, terrible.
The original Total Recall is still so great.
It is a great movie, yeah. And it's totally bonkers, the whole plot. It actually kind of hangs together. It was written by the same team that wrote Alien.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I didn't either. And so I was like, I saw the credits. I was like, oh, Dan O'Bannon and this other guy. And I was like, oh, wait a second. I recognize those names. And I did a quick search and it was like, yeah, the Alien team.
I thought it was Ridley Scott that wrote Aliens. Did he just direct it?
Yeah, he directed Alien, the first one. James Cameron did Aliens.
Oh, he did?
The follow-up, yeah.
Game over, man.
Right.
So good.
Bill Paxton, yeah. Great, 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 great performance.
One of Bill Paxton's greatest roles. So class. I mean, how can you make just saying that one line? it's so epic. People still quote it today.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you know exactly how he feels, too. Exactly. He had a couple of great lines right after that, too. The next scene, you know, it's like when they're discussing how they're going to survive. And Ripley says, you know, well, Newt here, you know, this little girl, she survived here for 6 weeks on her own. Mm-hmm. He's like, what do you put her in charge? It's a fucking great line.
That's great, man. Why don't we put her in charge?
Yeah, absolutely.